Calling all aspiring investment professionals, get a leg up on the competition. Final registration for the August CFA exam ends on May 14th. Register now to secure your spot. The CFA designation is a gold standard in the investment world, opening doors to high-powered careers and impressive salaries. Head over to cfainstitute.org to register. Don't wait. Take control of your finance career today.
Hello. Welcome to our podcast. And this time I have with me Kazim Ravi, who is Director of Financial Reporting Policy Advocacy in the EMEA region. I'm really happy because both of us have been working on the NFRD revision, which is the Non-Financial Reporting Directive revision, which is being revised in the EU. And of course, this doesn't stand alone. This really stands within the framework of renewed sustainable finance strategy that the Commission, the European Commission, relaunched in the end of the 2019. Again, very important. The climate was to gain a consensus as to where sustainability was going and to get a sustainable transition. Non-financial reporting really is part of this framework. And it needed to be clarified because transparency is key when we look at sustainable investments. The other parts of this equation are, of course, the regulation on sustainable disclosures and the regulation on a sustainable taxonomy, which will be dealt with in a later podcast when I will be talking to Martin Spolk, who is heading the unit on sustainable energy. But now to the non-financial reporting directive. Currently, this directive requires large public interest companies, which are listed, to include a statement on non-financial information in their annual report. Four sustainability issues are currently identified in the NFRD: environmental, social, and employee issues, human rights, bribery, and corruption. Might there be more, or mightn't they? Companies at the moment falling under the scope of the NFRD also need to disclose information about their business model, policy outcomes, risks, risk management, and KPIs. Now, I look at Kazim, and Kazim, of course, has a global hat on, so it is very interesting because CFA, when it looks at financial reporting, will typically come at it from a very global perspective, but taking into account sometimes the local specificities, as is happening in the EU. And the EU, of course, has been front-running other regions on sustainable strategy. So, Kazim, why is it so important that companies include non-financial information in their annual statements?
Hi, Justina. Thank you for having me here. I think I will answer that. It's becoming exceptionally important, this information. Investors are demanding it. They're using it. And I can give you an example. If you look at June 1st, Moody's downgraded India's sovereign rating. And I was going through the detail, and it was quite interesting that they actually cited ESG factors in there. So in environmental factor, they said that environmental considerations are material to India's credit profile as the country is vulnerable to climate change. For example, monsoon rains are critical for India's agriculture sector, given that almost half of the country's farmland is not irrigated. Over one half of India's overall consumption comes from rural sector, and many rural incomes are dependent on agriculture. The variability of seasonal monsoon rainfall continues to influence agricultural sector growth, food inflation, and rural household consumption, and increase the overall volatility of growth. Resulting droughts create economic, fiscal, and social cost for the sovereign. Elevated levels of pollution and rising concerns around water scarcity and management also presents environmental risk. So that just very nicely highlights that why this information is becoming important. Now there's a question that when is gonna happen, when it will materialize, when it will start impacting the actual number is still a question mark. But having said that, that information is important, that investors are looking at it and they are incorporating in the analysis. And we had another survey I like to cite last year. We published a survey which was basically a response to SEC comment letter on reporting, on quarterly reporting. And we asked our global membership, what is how important ESG factors are in your analysis. And around 67% said that governance is very important, and 51% said that environmental and social factors are very important. Now, this is in 2019, so we have moved on from that. And I think if you do another survey or finding, you'll see that there's a very strong appetite for information. So I think this just highlights to you why non-financial information is very important. Now, the second question that comes in is what should be done about it, like how it can be useful for investors. I think information need is there, but what needs to happen is that you need to have a consistent, comparable information. Because every time we speak with our charter holders or different investors, they always say like, yes, there's a lot of information coming in, but we always struggle at comparing it across our industry sectors or portfolio. So I would leave on that point. So I think that answers your question.
Thank you. And you raise the problem of comparability. And when we look at comparability, we have to already look at the interaction of the non-financial reporting directive together with other pieces of legislation of sustainable finance, such as the disclosures regulation and the taxonomy. But also we have to look at the bigger context, the global context. You know, how can we develop something in the EU that it remains comparable at the global level? And that really is important in today's financial markets. And our charter holders are very, very conscious of this comparability issue. And this is something that we like to engage with policymakers. So the regulatory arbitrage may actually lead to fragmented markets. And of course, in the EU, we are trying to build a capital markets union with equal information. But of course, and we'll discuss it later on in the podcast, we have small, medium-sized companies who, again, may or may not use non-financial information. We have private and public markets with differences in them. So how do we achieve this regular framework? It's also a question that there is perhaps not enough information or not publicly available information. And I remember a survey CFA Institute in the EMEA region did in 2015 when we waded into the Capital Markets Union strategy. And there, one of the issues we raise is about comparable information and available, publicly available information. Where do you get it? So having a single database for investor information, such as EDGAR, might be incredibly useful. And I think, again, this will be part of the debate in the coming years. Well, the European Commission is proposing within the revision to have an introduction to a requirement to apply a common standard. I talked a little bit about the issue on the global level and on the EU level. Kazem, you from your global perspective, is this the solution to have a standard in terms of comparability, reliability, and relevance? And maybe is there something that we could say on should there be specific EU issues here, or really can we talk about it from a global perspective?
I think I mainly work on the financial information side, and I can tell you this, that even when you have a standard, you have assurance, still we have a lot of time issues that need further clarification, further guidance, so that the application is consistent and comparable. Now, for investors, consistency and comparability is essential, because without these attributes, information loses its value. So having said that, I think as CFA Institute, we strongly believe that there is a need for a global, consistent standard setter or global rules that everyone can apply consistently, because I think that's where it really enhances the value. So we support a global standard setter on that behalf. On basis of standardization, I think standardization can only come if one body takes ownership of that rule setting and then review it over a period of time and provide additional guidance so that it if even if if you start from the scratch, you will always have some diversity. And I think ISB is a very good example of it. When they went global, they had a lot of policy choices. They had diversity, but over time, they reviewed it and they narrowed it down that it now has become a very good golden rule setter for everyone to follow in financial information. And I think something similar needs to happen. In regards to EU, we don't usually allow say that there should be regional differences. I think rule setting should be done from global perspective because that's where the major value addition is for investors. Because if you allow regional variances, it just kind of makes analysis a bit more difficult and more judgments come in, which is not helpful.
Thank you. And of course, it is important, as you say, to get this global perspective. But we have to recognize that at the EU level, we are in a market dominated by small, medium-sized companies. And I don't speak about the Anglo-Saxon, the UK and US type of small, medium-sized companies. I really talk about very small, medium-sized companies. And we've had an issue with their access to finance, and we've had an issue with their being able to list. And this has really been quite a topic that also at CFA Institute, we have been covering for the last 10 years. We did a survey back in 2013 on access to finance for the SMEs, and we worked with Michel Barnier on this. We have recently worked on an IPO task force report together with FESE, Federation of European Stock Exchanges, with the EBRD, European Bank of Reconstruction and Development, and Accountancy Europe. And in there, of course, the whole issue of SMEs and should SMEs have a lighter regime or not, in order to help them build that escalator and go to the public markets. Again, of course, we have the issue in the EU, or some countries have EU growth markets, some do not. Recently, I discussed this in the Netherlands, which doesn't have a growth market. And it was clear that they also looked at keeping a global standard, but perhaps being flexible on when that standard should be applied, which is something that we have said at CFA Institute. Again, also, when you look at the prospectus, there is a lighter prospectus for SMEs than there is for a bigger company. So some stakeholders have been pushing for a lighter disclosure regime. Again, these things are continuously being debated at the EU level as we try to re-equitize the economy, as we try to redevelop the public markets and get those SMEs listed and into retail investor interest. So again, we looked at the issue of a simplified version of a standard. You have already mentioned that there should be one single standard, and that should be being adapted in a flexible way. European CFA societies do also recommend that, and they think that being flexible is going to help those SMEs come to market. So I think, again, that shows the concern of our professional members in looking at the market and the possibilities. But at the same time, of course, just like the CFA credential is a global one, recognizing that we do need these global standards. And then I come to the issue of materiality, which of course, again, it was quite particular to this consultation that we filled in recently. The non-financial reporting directive requires the disclosure of non-financial information based on the double materiality principle. What is that? Now, we have financial materiality, which is the disclosure of sustainability issues that will affect or may affect the value of the company. And then you have impact materiality, which is the disclosure of activities that may affect society and the environment, typically ESG issues. Kazem, how do we at CFA Institute look at this double materiality? And is it clear enough in this revision of the non-financial reporting directive? And could it be clearer?
Sure. But before I answer, move on to materiality, I wanted to make a couple of points on SME. I think you're absolutely right that SME is a very important segment. It provides a lot of employment. And especially if you look at where we are now in a recession, there will be a recovery coming in. So it's a fair comment to say, like, look, how they will be applying non-financial information directive when it's already in its initial phase. And as a global CFA institute, we always say like there has to be one consistent rule book, irrespective of your location, where you're located, irrespective of your size of business. There should be one set of rules because that's how investors get better analysis. Because it's coming in a one format with under one standard. But having said that, I do think that there should be flexibility, as you just mentioned. And in our consultation, we did say that it should be voluntary for SME. Now, if certain regulators think that certain segments have to be applied from the start, it could come from there, or some other industry factors could come in. But I think over a period of time, we would like the gap to close and they all should move to one regime. And the problem with one, if you do a two-tier system, one full standard and one lighter approach, the problem which happens is like you get stuck in there. But then it's very difficult to tell the tier two that now you have to move to tier one. And I think that's not helpful. That's why I think we as a standard, as a consistent, we say like one rule for everyone.
I think it's a very good point, and thank you for picking up on that, on the SMEs. I think because we have, of course, our statement of investor rights, where we look at clear, transparent information. And that is also important when we go to the point of materiality again. So maybe if we turn now to the problem of materiality and if it's clear enough and if a double materiality concept would work.
I think coming mainly from financial information, there we have a problem of materiality. There are issues how it's interpreted. We have also noticed consistently there's a gap between how materiality is interpreted by preparers, how materiality is viewed by investors. There's a gap in there. With the concept of double materiality coming in, which I think someone very nicely explained within CFA Institute, that one is financial materiality and the other is impact materiality. I think there will be a definite need for clear guidance, how this is viewed. And again, I think one body that takes ownership of it would be very helpful so that everyone understands what it means, how it's interpreted, and how it's applied in practice.
And which body could that be? Who could take charge?
I would reserve my opinion on that. I think there should be one standards body. I think in our consultation, we included SASB, TCFD as two main ones. But again, I think irrespective of whoever it is, there has to be one body that takes ownership because only then you have a consistent application and you can improve it over time. Now, coming from investors' perspective, I think financial materiality is the most critical one. How it impacts your actual numbers, valuation, so that they can incorporate that in their analysis. And I always felt that there is a missing linkage as well, how it links, how non-financial links with financial information. Because one issue with non-financial is that you don't know when it will happen, how significant it could have an impact. And I think having an idea that both are included in annual report, I think it's a good idea. That's what we have also recommended in our consultation response. But I think materiality will be a challenging issue, at least in the near term. And this is why it will be helpful if how issuers are assessing materiality, they disclose that information. Because it will also provide a data point afterwards when you're reviewing or applying how it's considered, how it's applied by sectors or are there differences within sectors and what guidance can improve that. And I think at that point in time, then also SMEs could be looped in into as well, like once you have cost analysis and impact analysis, how good those disclosures are. So I think materiality will remain a challenge. I do think that's the important point.
And then I think it's something also for institutional investors to drive this in their conversations with companies, which is something that we at CFA Institute have been insisting on. The dialogue is important as the The world of information is incredibly complex and varied. This straight dialogue is a key issue. And again, in terms of sort of having a commitment to transparency, the right data, we then come to the point of assurance. So NFRD is not setting out any requirements for the assurance of non-financial information as required to what's being used in for financial statements in the accounting directive. Now, should there be assurance for non-financial statements, and should it be mandatory? Kazım, what do you think?
I think when we speak about this issue, most of the issuers tell us that they need some kind of assurance. But also those who disagree, they tell us that, look, it's important to understand assurance would be different from financial information. Because remember, financial information has a standard, a lot of practice behind it. So the quality of assurance and the standards for assurance as well are built in for that financial information. For non-financial information, I think there is a missing link, both from assurance standard and also from non-financial information standard perspective. But I do think that assurance will be needed. And I would draw your attention to our consultation response to Bryden. Bryden came in, I think it was last year, and the recommendations that came out, they have highlighted certain points. But one thing that we replied in that consultation was around assurance. We said, like, it's very important to understand that you have historical information, which is fine. You can give true and fair view because this is actual and it's fine. But with the changes happening in financial standards, there's a lot of judgments involved and more uncertain range, which is kind of increasing over time. And when you speak with analysts, what they really want to know is, like, all right, fine, how big is that range and where auditors think is? Because once they have that information, it provides them a good idea of the confidence in the number or how much it could be if certain different assumptions were taken. So in our consultation, that's the point we really we highlighted, saying that, look, within financial information as well, there are certain areas which require a high level of judgment, and they should be covered under a separate section, analytical opinion, you may call them, or graduated opinion, where you tell that whether it's optimistic or it's more conservative, based on some kind of a data analytics. And similar for non-financial information as well, because it is subjective. And even if you have a standard or certain body saying that this is the research we have on this basis, this is where it is, I think assurance need to provide, say, fine, based on this standard and based on this studies, we think this is likely or unlikely, or just highlight the assumption points where they disagree. Because I think that will provide value addition information for investors.
Yeah, and you know, we live in an age when information is so vast. And we have seen that with policy making, impact assessments are being used to analyze the weight and the right information and how it's going to be effective. Well, in such a way, assurance will weigh the effectiveness of that information. That's how I see it. It's a brave new world for companies, for institutional investors. We need to make a transition to adapt a multitude of information. Probably artificial intelligence will help in some way, but we know that the human brain will remain at the end of it, because we need to sift through and we need to make value judgments. So I think this is really some of the importance in this debate. Any last thoughts on this?
I think just one quick point. I think your point is very valid about data analytics. You have so much data available now that you should be using technology, and I'm talking this from assurance perspective as well. I think they need to involve more technology, more data analytics, and provide information which is not absolutely certain. Well, I think everyone knows that, if you're giving assurance on number or on certain disclosure, which is subjective in nature, there would be it might not be absolutely correct. I think everyone understands that. What validation would be that you provide, like, our fund, we have checked based on this standard, it complies with that standard, and what is the level of uncertainty included in there? What are the assumptions? What did you expect that they are quite uncertain? I think that's where the direction of travel has to follow. Overall, I do think non-financial information is very important. It also will complement a lot of financial information as well. It will also complement a business model. I think one point we didn't mention was scope. I think one question was, should we increase the scope of, should we just stay with ESG or should some other factors include it? And we did highlight aging population. We highlighted technological advancement. Supply chain was highlighted from our societies. And I think these factors are important. A lot of times they get embedded in within ESG, but on their own, they are very critical because they ask that question, how technological disruption will impact your business model. If you have aging population, it's not just a pension crisis issue. It also impacts you as a customer, as your workforce. So what are you doing and how you will manage that over a longer term? So I firmly believe that non-financial information is very valuable information, but it has to come in a standardized, comparable way so that all stakeholders can use it in a beneficial way.
Thank you. And, as you were saying this, it reminded me of a story of a bat who lived in a cave and saw everything in black and white. And one day he went outside during daylight, and suddenly everything was multicolored. And he decided to paint himself in all colors of the rainbow because it was not good to be black. So can we say that non-financial information can be the color that gives us an additional view, perhaps a more holistic view of a company? Kazim, it's been great talking to you. With me was Kazim Razvi, Director of Financial Reporting. Hopefully at some other stage, we'll be continuing this conversation, but thank you for today.
Great, thank you for having me here. Thank you.